This is episode 297 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, September the 13th, 2010.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio, in your backyard, and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. iiNet is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McComb and welcome to the 297th edition of Tech Talk Radio. It's been a long time between drinks since Microsoft has had anything to hang its hat on. The last memorable moment was the launch 12 months ago of Windows 7. And it's been a great success compared to its predecessor, Vista. But in that last 12 months, almost all of the major manufacturers and software developers have been releasing new stuff. But good old Microsoft has been a little bit quiet of late. But maybe that's all about to change. As Jeff Alexander from Microsoft Australia preempted on last week's Tech Talk Radio, the new generation of controller-less game consoles is about to hit the market just in time for Christmas. Microsoft's Natal has been reborn as Kinect and promises a whole new era of gaming in the living room, the likes of which we've never seen before. The Xbox has been widely regarded as the best gaming console on the market, so Kinect has big shoes to fill. Apple has certainly highlighted the fact that phones are the way to the consumer's wallet. So too has Google's Android operating system, which can be found on most HTC devices. So now it's Microsoft's turn with the upcoming launch of Phone 7. In a bizarre move last week, Microsoft chose to celebrate Windows Phone 7 ready to market with a funeral parade for BlackBerry and iPhone, with a noticeable absence of Android. Strange but true, complete with a thriller dance too. And the final trick up Microsoft's sleeve is the pending release of the company's new web browser, Internet Explorer 9. IE9 promises HTML5 support, something which has been controversial in recent times, what with Steve Jobs' outright refusal to allow Flash to be used in his iGadgets. Silverlight will remain a plugin, and it's also the application's platform for Windows Phone 7. So the beta of IE9 will be put on show for those interested this Thursday at a Microsoft breakfast gathering. And of course, Tech Talk Radio will be there.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Conroy wins bigger communications role in Gillard's front bench shakeup. Australian iPhone and iPad developers welcome changes Apple made to its App Store approvals process. Microsoft sorry for US cloud coverage. Adam Turner takes a look at ACTA, or the Anti-Counterfeiting Trade Agreement, and what it means to AFACT and iiNet and Optus are getting into traffic monitoring. First up, though, here's the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Australia's new government and what it means for the NBN. Apple eases restrictions for application developers. Mozilla's latest Firefox fixes security vulnerabilities. The ACCC takes legal action against Optus again. And NASA asks for more funding to track near-Earth objects. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Well, Australia has a new government of sorts. The now infamous website DoesAustraliaHaveAGovernmentYet.com last week transitioned from status almost to status yes, after deals were struck between Julia Gillard's Labor Party and four of the five independent representatives. For independents Rob Oakeshott and Tony Windsor, Labor's national broadband network was a crucial issue which helped them to make their decisions. Independent member for New England, Tony Windsor.
The experts that were advising me, some from regional Australia, kept saying this is a great opportunity that we really don't fully comprehend the advantages and the cost impacts on regional health, regional education, regional business. It really negates distance as being a disadvantage of being a country person, in a sense, and really changes the equation in terms of location.
Mr Windsor told the ABC's AM program that a $10 billion package for regional Australia was part of an agreement he reached with the Prime Minister, but also said that the Labor Party would still have to negotiate every piece of legislation through Parliament.
All we've done is allow a government to be formed. Theoretically, at least, I could vote against everything the government ever does. There again, it puts country Australia in a very, very important position.
The ABC's chief political correspondent, Lyndall Curtis, said that negotiations would be fast and furious on every single piece of legislation. Minister for Broadband, Communications and the Digital Economy, Senator Stephen Conroy, likened the new lower house landscape to the Senate.
Well, look, that's not a lot different to when you have to negotiate through the Senate. Being a senator, I've never been in a chamber that Labor has had a majority in.
Mr Conroy was optimistic about the new level of cooperation which would be required with independent members in order to pass future communications legislation.
The Greens and the Country Independents have all indicated that they're backing the single largest reform that the Rudd and now Gillard governments are putting forward, and that is the National Broadband Network.
To other news this week, Apple has announced it will ease restrictions for developers of applications for the iPhone and iPad, which could pave the way for the use of third-party tools like Adobe Flash. In a media release last week, Apple said that we are continually trying to make the App Store even better. We have listened to our developers and taken much of their feedback to heart. Based on their input, today we are making some important changes to our iOS developer program license. While developers have effectively been banned from using Flash software to date, analysts say that Apple is feeling pressure from application developers who are now spending more time and money on other platforms like Google Android. The developer of Flash technology, Adobe, said in response that Apple's course reversal was great news for developers. Adobe's Packager for iPhone, a feature in the Flash Professional CS5 authoring tool, was created to enable Flash developers to quickly and easily deliver applications for iOS devices. Shares of Adobe surged more than 12% on the Nasdaq last week after Apple made its announcement. A new release of Mozilla's popular open-source web browser, Firefox, fixes a number of security issues. 14 security vulnerabilities, 10 of them critical, are fixed in the latest Firefox, which is version 3.6.9. These fixes address the potential to load malicious copies of DLLs under Windows XP and maliciously crafted fonts on Mac OS X. Also, a new feature in Firefox is support for the HTTP response header, XFrame Options. Mozilla explains in its security blog that this optional header can instruct web browsers on whether the returned content is allowed to be framed by other pages. This can be used by websites to protect visitors from so-called clickjacking and ensuring that content is not embedded in other sites. The latest version of Mozilla's Firefox can be downloaded from getfirefox.com. Australia's consumer watchdog, the ACCC, has initiated legal proceedings in the federal court against Optus for alleged breaches of the Trade Practices Act. This latest action concerns a television advertisement which features a deer breaking the sound barrier. The ACCC has alleged that Optus engaged in misleading or deceptive conduct and made false representations in relation to the advertising of certain broadband plans. In a press release, the ACCC said that the matter was listed for a directions hearing on the 16th of September. And two asteroids passed close to Earth on Wednesday last week, prompting NASA to examine better techniques to identify and track near-Earth objects, or NEOs. Discovered on the 5th of September by the NASA-funded Catalina Sky Survey in Arizona, the objects were about 20 metres across and came to within about half the distance of the Earth to the Moon. While NASA researchers said that neither asteroid posed a risk to Earth, the objects did serve as a reminder of other potentially hazardous objects expected to narrowly miss Earth in coming years. According to IT Wire, the United States currently spends about $5.5 million every year on NEO tracking and detection. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
I'm going to break from tradition here and scare a lot of people.
You're not talking about what we're talking about in the chat.
No, they have their own show. They have their own show there.
What's the collective noun for people in a chat room?
In our chat room? I would dread
well,
to think.
Apparently there's this ping thing that I think Dr. Ron mentioned in the news.
Ping has a pong.
iOS is a moon around Mars, isn't it?
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
That's iOS. Take note, Apple, HDMI output cable and carrying case.
Let's have some personal responsibility. If you're going to cross the road, look both ways.
1366 by 768 was the aspect ratio.
Adam's got one he doesn't want.
Why would I want an Apple TV without a hard drive?
What you're describing is bloatware.
Bloatware, yeah. Now,
targets that family and allows them to organise their photos, the music, everything that they've got in their digital life in one location.
The WAF is very, very high. It has high WAF.
Thank you.
Well, you're welcome.
Hey. Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
It's that time of the night again, wherever you might be listening to us around this wonderful country. Hello, everybody. This is Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McCollum. Sitting in front of me today, two very able gentlemen, probably more able than I am at the moment, having nursing a tooth arrangement, as you do, being to the dentist lately. And Dr. Ron, good evening to you, and Dr. Graham.
Hello, I haven't been in the dentist's chair. I'm okay.
No, you're the lucky one.
G'day, Andrew.
Hello. You've got a fan, Graham.
A fan?
Yeah, someone who's... who likes what you say.
A supporter.
A supporter. My father-in-law.
Oh, yes.
He said, I like Dr. Graham. He keeps you guys honest. It brings reason to this show.
And you do. Well, someone has to.
So there you go. You've got a fan there. I thought, oh,
fantastic.
Well, we're just saying before the show, what's changed...
Sorry, I'll turn thingy-me bob down.
Okay. What's changed in dental technology in the last 1,000 years? Oh, you've got a tooth that's to come out. Yeah, we'll get a pair of pliers. And out it comes.
Look, one of the only things I think is they now have dissolvable stitches. As people are cringing all over.
Yeah.
Shall we move on?
We never.
I did. Never, I tried.
Probably
he
didn't have
me.
Stitches 1,000 years ago, but yeah, I feel sorry for you. It's probably the worst physical pain I've ever experienced in my life is having a wisdom tooth out.
Now, no longer it's the tooth that's giving me grief. It's the surrounding areas.
I feel for you.
Thank
I feel
you.
For you.
What a week it's been. Hey, Google. Hey. When you think Google can get no better, have you been to google.com lately?
I have been to Google.com
lately.
Okay,
bring up a web browser.
Here we go. Yeah.
Everyone follow along at home.
Okay, Google. Follow the bouncing Google. Yep.
Google.com and just go to .com/au and click down the bottom right-hand corner.
Okay.
And start typing in the search box and just behold what happens.
I heard about this. I haven't played with it yet. Though.
Haven't you? Oh, no, it's very worth a play. It's this new instant search. So as you type, it actually gives you search results. Like normally you used to type in Tech Talk Radio and Melbourne and Australia or something like that and then hit return and you'd get your results. Now they give you results as you type.
Now we've seen for a while where you've, as you've typed in Google, you've got search suggestions. So it comes down with a little pull down list of other things that might be the rest of what you're trying to search for. But this is different in addition to that. It actually gives you search results, not just search suggestions as
you go. Yeah, that's right, the results. So you think about the technology behind this. Tapping on your little laptop, it goes all the way over there to the big Google search engine and comes back to you almost within the keystroke.
Now, what have you
one key at a time, yeah.
What have you had to do to make this work? Anything? Have you logged in? Are you not logged in? Have you clicked on a link?
No, just be standard at google.com.
Yeah.
Okay, and just start typing. It's as simple as that. Why is it not working for you?
No, it's giving me suggestions.
No, because you're on iGoogle. You're not on the google.com search page.
Yeah, go to .com.
So there's a link up in your top right there somewhere.
Yes,
you should be trying this at home, everybody.
Home.
Yep, that's what you want. Now, have a look at the address. Is it Google Australia you're at or google.com?
I'm at Google Australia.
Okay, down towards the bottom of the screen across on the right, you'll see there's a go to google.com.
Go to google.com. Okay, I'm at google.com now.
Now it'll work.
Start typing.
Okay.
There you go, and that's working for you.
Oh, look at that.
Isn't that impressive?
Google Instant.
Not available in Australia yet.
It's popped up with four or five different possible completions of his query that he's typing, but it's also shown below that actual results complete with extracts from the web page of pages that might match what he's starting to type.
How much bandwidth is this using? Probably
not
well,
much.
It's mostly text.
It's just
so
text.
Not,
it's got,
not much.
Not much at all.
Not much at all, I suppose. But it's like you're almost doing a search on... It's doing a dynamic search on it as you type every character, isn't it?
Each time you add a new key, a new letter to the search, it goes and does another search on what it thinks you might be heading towards.
So just when you thought it couldn't get any better, Google has gone the next level. Obviously, this is on the .com site, which is the US site, and it'll be rolling out in Australia sometime down the track, but it's not here just yet. It's called Google Instant Search, as you guys said. Launched last Wednesday, I think it was, in San Francisco. And Google over there in the US basically said it'll be in Australia and New Zealand in the coming weeks, is their words. So, suitably impressed, I thought. Not bad.
Bing, now you've got something to have a go at.
Now, I don't remember the last time I went to the Google homepage to do a search, because I use Chrome as a web browser, and if I want to search for something, I just type the search query straight into the address field of that browser.
Absolutely. Yeah, me too.
Habitual, isn't it?
Mm,
so you miss out on that feature now, so maybe there's a reason for you to get back to the web page.
To the point where you'll even save typing. If I want to go to techtalkradio.com.au, and I can't be bothered typing the .com.au, I'll just type in Tech Talk Radio and hit enter, and it'll search for Tech Talk Radio, and then I just click the response that I want.
I got a really short domain for people like you. It's yeah. ttr.net.au.
Well, so I would still just type ttr.
Does the same thing. Yeah, well, there you go.
Yeah.
It's good.
I would just I just type in the name of the site I want. I don't bother with typing in the actual address.
Shortcuts for people like Graham.
Because it does the search, does work for me. All I've got to do is less typing and then one click.
Hmm. Some other interesting websites that come across this week, but we're going to save that for the website of the week. Were you suitably impressed with that without giving it away?
I was very impressed with that, yes.
Yeah, let's just say it's a YouTube-ish type sort of thing, and it's very, very good. So no, stick around to the end of the show.
I've got
and
that
find
in
out
the show
one.
Notes.
Oh, have you?
Yes,
oh,
yes. We've got some good gadget website Oddspot things.
All right. Now, do you want to hit some Cairo? There's plenty of Cairo, apparently.
Oh, there's plenty of Cairo.
People
Thank
who
you,
have sent us emails to wherever, at mail at techtalkradio, or feedback at techtalkradio.com.au and all that sort of stuff.
All that sort of good stuff. Thank you very much for all your correspondence,
come
your
along
emails
to the chat.
And your things.
I'll tab back there now.
Yeah, if you're listening live, go to chat.techtalkradio.com.au. We're all logged in there at the moment. JD sends his apologies this week as well. So no Ustream this week, but hopefully we'll
That's
be back with us next
I
week.
Always do feel for, when we always say this, where we're listening on the chat, and if you're listening live, if it's you know Monday night and you're listening to the show live, and there's so many people out there who don't listen to the show live, who listen on other radio stations around the world or listen to the podcast and so on, who don't get to do that. So if you're one of those people, forget all of us talking about the chat. What you guys need to do is hit the forum, forum.techtalkradio.com.au, and that's the place where you can have just as good a discussion, in fact, possibly a better discussion, because you get considered longer form responses from people if you type up a post about what you're concerned about or what you're thinking about as you're listening to the show on the forum.
Absolutely.
All you have to do is click on the link and provide a name, a made-up name, a username. Doesn't have to be your real name, and an email address, and that's all you need to join. It's completely free.
Absolutely. You don't even need to join if you just want to read. If you just want to browse the topics, you can go there
that's
anonymously.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah,
browse
you don't,
away.
Yeah, it's all open to the public. You can browse through it without joining up and have a read of what goes on there before you decide to join up.
Speaking of the podcast you have when you're not having a podcast, how's your Stitcher going?
Stitcher's good. I listened to last week's episode on Stitcher.
Yep.
And it worked very well. And I was using it on the 3 mobile phone network. And I was out with the K9 unit walking around the suburbs with the
what? With Tess. Doctor Who and the TARDIS.
No, Tess on the leash. We were
the dog.
We're out patrolling, yep. Yes. And I had the headphones on and I had Stitcher on. I was listening to the podcast and it worked brilliantly. Didn't have any dropouts on 3, which was good.
Excellent.
Yeah. The only complaint that I've got, I don't know whether it's user error or otherwise, but when I stopped the podcast and I came back to listen to a bit more the next day, it didn't remember what I was up to, and I had to manually seek or jump forward.
How does that work on Stitcher? Does it work all right? Because you're actually moving down the stream as opposed to moving down a file.
Well, you're telling the Stitcher server that you want to jump to this location, and that just starts streaming from that location. And it worked fine doing that, but I thought it might have been...
You just had to remember where you're up to instead of having the machine remember for you.
Exactly. But I thought it might remember for me because I was specifically logged in. But that's all right. That doesn't matter. I'm sure they'll look at...
Coming in Stitcher 2.0. Are you listening, Stitcher developers?
A lot of good podcasts on Stitcher. Leo's there. The Onion, a few others.
Yes, there's a lot of ABC programs there.
Absolutely.
There's a lot of good content.
And BBC and Canada Broadcasting and NPR. There's all the networks with the best podcasts
all
are on there.
All the good quality stuff's there. That's why we're there.
That's why we're there, yeah.
Absolutely. Off you go, Dr. On.
Long-time friend of Tech Talk Radio and audio engineer extraordinaire, Jeff Gates.
Oh, hi, Jeff. Haven't heard from Jeff for a while.
He says via email, so I got a Telestial SIM for my phone.
A what? A Telestial?
Telestial.
I thought
he might have made a typo. I was thinking a terrestrial SIM. No, it's Telestial is the brand. And it makes
there
your
is.
Phone
he's
beep.
Texting just, him now.
He's texting him to say, look, doctor, and it works. In fact, it does work.
Someone sent me a text to say, put your phone on silent.
Oh, okay. That's good.
It so works guess whose on phone
very
that is.
It works in 120 countries and has free incoming voice and text in 60 countries. The incoming number is a UK number. But Telestial provides free 800 numbers, like what we would call 1-800 numbers,
yeah,
in several countries to call the UK number for free. So theoretically, if you call the Australian free number, which is 1-800, blah, 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 then at the prompt, you put in my world number, which is 44 for UK, 792, rah, 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 you could call my cell phone for free. I thought this was cool.
That's pretty snazzy, isn't it?
Give me a call to catch up sometime. Jeff Gates sent from my iPad.
Oh, Jeff, get rid of that.
I left that in because I knew that
from my iPad.
You had political opinions about that tag. You've got a tagline that says sent from my non-Apple device.
Correct.
Jeff, good to hear from you, and we will give you a call sometime. Have a Google or a wiki of Telestial. It's an interesting company. They've got some interesting products.
Hmm. I will. That sounds very good. Have you tried your Google phone stuff
yet
on your Gmail?
No, have you topped up your account?
I have. I've got $9.98 left.
Good on you.
Yeah, it's good. I've been having a lot of fun. I've just got to work out how to send texts on it, because that's where I reckon it'd be coming. 2 cents a text, that's got to be good.
2 cents a text, pretty cheap, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Pretty good.
Well, I'm assuming it's 2 cents. I think it is.
Michael, via email, says...
TARDIS.
Hi, team. No, this is not TARDIS. This is another Michael.
Oh, lots of Michaels.
Michael non-TARDIS.
Hello, Michael non-TARDIS.
I came across this interest...
Is he Greek?
No, he's not,
doesn't it?
It's a geek. I'm sorry. Look, Damo the Geek's in our chat room tonight. Hi, Damo. And I called Damo the Greek once inadvertently.
And he's never let you forget it.
And the panelists here never let me forget it, Damo. Michael says, hi, team. I came across this interesting article on the future of community radio during one of my many travels through cyberspace. And he's got a link there to a blog post at arena.org.au. We'll put these links up in the show notes at the end of the show. It provides a bit of an overview of the development of community radio and looks at some non-technical issues related to the introduction of the new digital format. Cheers, Michael. It was an interesting read. We certainly broadcast on many community stations, many fine community stations around the country.
All analog, all the best kind.
Well, this is it. As radio stations start to migrate to the new digital format, are community stations going to have to do the same?
Well, yes, eventually. Not in the short term. Look what happened to television. Channel 31 in Melbourne, and I think in other capital cities around Australia, which is traditionally the community channel, has moved to, I think, Channel 44.
It now has a digital transmission.
Yeah, so you can actually see really good VHS quality in digital.
They're not going to phase out the normal analog radio signals anytime soon, are they?
No, I don't think it's on the cards.
Broadcast radio?
No. You've also got to bear in mind, too, that you know some of the romantic AM signals and stuff just get into places where FM doesn't as well. So, you know, you're going to, especially for essential service broadcasts and things like that, you've got to keep those.
Mm. Michael, thank you for the feedback there.
Did you say where it's going to go?
No, just have a look. I'll put the link up in the show notes. Yeah, yeah.
The future of technology and radio broadcasting.
And community broadcasting. Glenn, via the Tech Talk Radio contact form, says, g'day.
Hello.
G'day, Glenn. One thing to remember about most modern phones that can play music, the headphones are also a hands-free system, which in my opinion is a really, really, really good reason to wear them while driving.
Oh,
Andrew,
this is what we were talking about last week.
You had cause to rant and rave last week about the lady in your street with little white earbuds that walks into traffic without looking.
Yeah, correct. She still does. She's still alive.
So she she still does.
Saw her the other day.
She's still alive. All current iPhones, says Glenn, Samsung and Nokia and HTC and Motorola and many other brands come with headphones which double as really good hands-free kits. What really bugs me is people holding their phones to the ear or using the speakerphone, holding it in their hand, when driving.
Oh, yes, and especially if they're in a BMW or a Mercedes.
Is that
sorry,
right?
I just thought I'd add that.
Okay. Opinions expressed to the radio. When every phone I've seen in the last 4 years comes with good hands-free headphones, says Glenn. As for electric cars... Yes, the pedestrians that want louder cars just need to get their heads out of there, expletive deleted, and watch the world around them while walking. Regards, Glenn.
Yes. Thanks, Glenn.
Well said. I couldn't have put it better myself.
You had an opinion about that last week, Graham.
I did. I still do.
Jeremy, via email, says, hi, TTR crew. G'day, Jeremy.
Gee, how's it going? Hi, Jeremy.
Just before you move on to Jeremy, though.
Yeah, please, stand by, Jeremy.
So you were saying about the... people holding the phone in their hands or whether they should use the headphones or whatever.
Yes.
It doesn't matter whether you've got it on speakerphone, whether you've got the headphones plugged in, you know, whatever you got. If the phone isn't in a properly mounted holder designed to hold the phone, it's not legal.
In the state of Victoria.
Yeah. And in the rest of the country, I don't know whether it's legal or not, but it certainly isn't sensible.
I think that's a fair...
sums it up beautifully, Graham.
Put it in a proper phone
written,
holder.
Spoken and authorised by... Yes.
Me.
The Graham. For Graham, for the Graham party.
Graham, the panellist. Jeremy, via email, says, Hi, TTR crew. G'day, Jeremy. Just a question regarding a comment Andrew made about Bravia's internet video service.
Oh, it's a pick on Andrew night tonight, is it?
I was thinking about upgrading my current Sony Blu-ray player for a newer model with Bravia internet video built in.
Don't do that.
However, Andrew alluded to the fact that he thought it wasn't too crash hot. What is it that he doesn't like about the service? Love the show. Regards, Jeremy. Sent from my iPhone.
And you're looking at me. You want an answer. I did actually respond to Jeremy on email
this. You said that you're not a fan of the Bravia internet TV.
Because you're going to read out of my response.
Because it's proxied, is that right?
Correct,
Tell us what that means. It's proxied.
Well, basically, I think, reading between the lines, what Sony do in order to protect all the services on their Bravia television set is they get they basically bounce the feed or repeat the feed through their system. So let's say, for example, if a network provider or one of the many providers change a URL, rather than having to send out a patch to all the television sets to go and find the new URL or anything like that, they can actually proxy it through their Sony system. So they do one change at their end and it still all arrives at their television sets without doing any updates. So what happens is if you're a subscriber to, say, Internode, or iNet, I believe Internode's a non-metered thing for ABC's iView, like iNet
like
is.
Like iNet is, for sure.
If you use the proxy system or use the television in or the internet TV in the Bravia, it'll be metered. So you'll pay for it in respect to your average bandwidth over that month. Whereas if you use the direct connect method through, say, a PlayStation 3 or something like that, the PS3 just connects straight to iView.
Or a media center.
Or a media center, yes. You can circumvent the need to part with your hard-earned bandwidth when you can get it for free. So,
why is it that Sony do that? Just quality control, you think?
I'm purely speculating here. It's just so that they... Let's say, for example, because Sony proxy many different things. Channel 7, Channel 10, SBS... Sorry, not Channel 10. Channel 7, ABC, SBS, and a whole heap of other non-broadcast type sort of things. Now, if any one of those providers change a URL, which is beyond Sony's control, I suspect rather than send out patches to television sets to read when they click on the 7 catch-up or whatever... or whatever the service might happen to be, they just do one little tweak and it just re-proxies it back through their system. So that's my theory. I'm sticking to it. I could be wrong. Someone will tell me on the chat, I'm sure.
Jeremy, I hope that answers your question. We have an email from either Chrome Ronan or Chroma Onan. It's not entirely clear because there's no space in the email name. Chrome, he says via email, iTunes and Apple. I'm actually an iTunes hater. And one of the last applications I have to keep a Windows machine around for is just to sync media to my iPhone. Alarmed at the possibility of a feature disappearing without notice, I checked out Ringtone Creation. I was still able to create a ringtone this way. And he's got a link there to a blog post at ehow.com, which I'll put in the show notes. Still only took 2 minutes, says Chrome, and most of that was trying to find where iTunes was stashing the exported file, and the new album view actually made it easier to clean up the copies of the file from the iTunes database afterwards. As for bloatware, which we were talking about last week, the memory footprint of iTunes on my PC seems to have actually reduced with version 10, and performance seems a little better. Well, that's good news.
Yeah, they took out all the PowerPC support, probably. they did the same thing with iOS with OS X recently, so why wouldn't they do it with iTunes?
Potentially. He says, faster launch, but still annoying how the database is single-user access only. iTunes is really just a custom web browser now, says Chrome.
It's a custom shop front.
With media playback bolted on, the iTunes store is simply an XML-based website. He can even browse it from his Linux PC. That's interesting.
There you go. You should try that.
I have to give that a shot. Yeah. The ping options showed up in iTunes on my phone with no additional updates, as it is just a rendered web app. This is a sort of hybrid cloud with a custom client. Now, if Apple could just unlock the requirement for wired sync, getting music, podcasts, and video on my phone is the last piece that has to be bridged by a cable. Thanks, Chrome. There's some good comments there.
Absolutely.
And Michael, last but certainly not least, this is TARDIS Michael, not Michael, non-TARDIS Michael. Yeah. He says he was disappointed that last week's guest, Jeff Alexander, didn't get to some of the questions he emailed through. Michael, we've forwarded That's okay. We've forwarded those to Jeff, and we hope to have a response for you very soon, which we'll read out on air. And that's all the correspondence for this week.
Talk Radio.
See? That's what happens. Lots of Coro. Anyway, let's talk about some of the news that happened this week. We've got a government now. Have they updated the website? I think you said in the news that it says yes now.
It's gone from almost to yes.
Almost to yes.
But Graham...
Can I do my bit here?
Off you go.
I was saying off air before, this is the stupidest website in the entire world. Well, no, perhaps not. Perhaps the one with the cats is a bit sillier. But this one, Australia at every single stage had a government. There was no point at which Australia did not have a government. It's completely wrong. It's completely false. The government was in caretaker mode. There was no point where Australia did not have a government. Australia had a government. It did. It had a government last week. It's got a government this week. Government goes on.
But it wasn't a real government, though.
They were the public servants. Don't tell him.
Well, the country certainly kept running, didn't it?
Yeah, I think it did. Didn't it skip a beat.
That's right.
But anyway, the shenanigans that has been going on in Canberra of late has certainly drawn the attention of, I guess, a lot of tech people, I guess, because I think the reason why we do now have a Labor government, which probably didn't win based on anything that it did, it was based on the NBN, really, if you know what I mean. The two remaining independents decided, because... not Barnaby, what's his name? Catter decided he was going to support the coalition. Mm-hmm. And the remaining two guys, Mr. Oakeshott and Mr. Windsor, decided that they were going to support Labor's NBN thing. So it was really...
Which gave them their...
It was really one of the key deciding policies that actually got the Labor government basically re-elected, if you want to use that word. I don't know, but the future of this current working arrangement in Canberra is certainly something which we haven't seen before, and a lot of pundits are sort of taking a bit of a stab that we're only going to see this sort of political arrangement maybe for the next 12 months, but who knows? We should be positive.
I think
maybe we might get it longer, but I can't see it hanging the test of time.
And I think this is the thing of the future. I don't think that Australians in the future are going to vote in such massive numbers for A or B. They're going to choose option C, D, and E. They're going to choose the minor parties, the Greens, the Independents.
Smoke Salmon in our chat room has just said that Graham is the Rob Oakeshott of Tech Talk Radio. How do you feel about that, Graham? Rob?
I'm not too distressed. Rob Oakeshott is a very attractive man, isn't he?
He is very intellectual. Very yes. we had all.
Who's
the
Barnaby Joyce? Don't answer that.
I told you, JD put in his apologies tonight, and there's a reason why he can't be here. Now,
he's got a new hat.
Of the five independents, correct me if I'm wrong, but we had Bob Catter, who was the Far North Queensland
mad as a
Bob Catter. Now he backed the coalition, but each of the other independents sided with Labor. And there was a significant interest in the NBN and the
Greens member in Melbourne also decided to back a Labor government.
Correct. Yeah.
But the NBN really was the turning point for the election.
And a lot of people, I've just looked at doesaustraliagovernmentyet.com, it's changed to a bit. That's quite funny.
Damo the Greek's been Chaser Boys.
No, I've clicked on a link that Warlock posted. It says it's called doesaustraliahavethenbnyet.com. It looks like it's brought to us by the same people that brought us the other one, and it says a bit. We've got a bit of an NBN. Yeah, that's true. I have to keep an eye on that. That could be the second silliest website, Graham, that you've seen this week. So we had four of the five independents that sided with Labor, and certainly the National Broadband Network was a key discussion.
Down came the stutterer
point,
mounted
it?
On his 12-speed. Up jumped the climate deniers. One, two, three.
You can't read all of that text
on
the radio. No, I just thought I'd stop you there.
There you go. Now, it was a critical issue in discussions, and certainly more than one independent said that, look what we're going to have for our constituents if we've got this broadband. We're going to have a fantastic opportunity here to take this to get this for country and for rural Australians.
All this rhetoric is just fine. We've had a lot of backslapping, and of course, some people have now turned that it hasn't gone their way. But now what we need to do is actually get things moving. And of course, Telstra is going to be a big key issue in this, and we're now going to need a little bit of maybe bipartisan support in the lower house from the coalition. What do you reckon? They're all just going to be blanket no, and because they can type sort of no, whereas, come on, guys, let common sense prevail and let's run the country the right way. So, because it could all be for naught if the coalition decide to dig their heels in and vehemently oppose any form of NBN alterations. It won't stop it, but it'll certainly slow the process down. in rolling it out into regional and rural areas, that's for sure. So
you're talking about them being able to block it in the Senate.
Well, even in the lower house to a degree too, but it just depends on what they're trying to achieve.
In the lower house, they it'll get through on the Labor plus the independents that support it. So assuming everybody shows up to vote.
And that's the correct thing. And that's assuming,
The independents support it as well. There's been more than one independent.
What happens if someone has a sickie in the lower
we're
house?
We're not just going to rubber stamp everything. We're going to have to
In the previous parliament, those independent members are the ones with the absolute worst attendance record for attending divisions.
So what happens to their vote?
They're going to have to lift their game.
Do a postal vote or something?
No. They just don't vote.
Oh, okay. So you end up with a...
Instead of
75 versus 75, you might have whatever less the seats that are vacant at the time.
Yeah.
Handy.
Yeah. So if one of them is a bit slack and doesn't show up to a vote, then, it could be a bit of a problem.
Anyway...
the government needs every single vote.
Mr. Conroy didn't promise priority to the independents, but what's obviously going to happen now is they're going to rejig... the way it's rolled out. So they're going back to NBN Co to sort of see if they can put a bit more emphasis on some of the more rural areas. I think that was one of the trade-offs there. And I think it's a good thing too, in a lot of respects.
Certainly in the major cities, at the moment, we're fairly well served by ADSL 2+.
Mm.
And whereas that's completely impractical for rural areas, so that does make some sense. Of course, even in the cities, we're going to need higher speeds than ADSL can do, and this is the bit that the opposition don't get.
They don't
seem to understand that.
I did a speed test recently on the weekend with I was talking to Dr. Ron about it. You're basically a kilometre and a half on the same exchange that I'm on for my ADSL 2+, and the difference in speed is phenomenal, just over a kilometre and a half of extra cable. So. But anyway, Mr. Conroy said the independents, Tony Windsor and Rob Oakeshott, did not put any plan forward whatsoever to prioritise the rollout of the NBN in their electorate. So, so far, so good. They seem to be looking at the common good of rural Australia. Both Windsor and Oakeshott said or had listed broadband as an important factor in their decision. So maybe this is it. This is where we're going to start seeing some action happen. But Mr. Quigley's still in a job. That's got to be a good thing. And also, they're actually ramping up again. They were sort of in caretaker. When I say they, the NBN Co, which is the government organisation tasked to rolling out the national broadband network, they were in caretaker mode, sitting around having cups of tea, swinging the billy.
Well,
in
they were worried
the,
if Mr. Abbott's coalition came to government, that the whole thing would get scrapped.
Yeah, and all that you'd get outside of the areas where fibre or even ADSL 2+ is profitable, all you'd get would be 4G wireless, and bandwidth is limited. People, do people not understand that radio frequency bandwidth is a very, very, very scarce resource?
Well, you might want to explain that to Mr. Abbott, along with the lines of peak speeds.
I'd like to explain it to him with a large hammer.
Like Kerry O'Brien did recently, which we ran to air on the show about what peak speeds are.
So. Yeah, and the CEOs of the the big business-backed ISPs that brought out their stupid statement a week or so ago. Did anybody see that? The group of ISPs that brought out their statement about, we don't really need an NBN, we only need the 4G wireless plan.
Who said that?
There was a...
Bob Catter?
No. It was a coalition of various ISPs, internet service providers.
The one that represents everybody except Telstra and Optus. Is it that one?
Oh, the CCC, the coalition for...
carrier coalition.
I can't remember. I think it was an organisation that was specifically formed to put out this statement, if my suspicions are correct.
Right.
But, noticeably absent was Internode, which... known for having one of the best design networks around the country.
Mm.
Well, then there's also that issue of wholesaling too. Internode basically came out during the course of the week. I read an article, I think, and basically apologised to a lot of its customers, saying that it can't do better than Telstra on their Telstra resold stuff because they just can't. It's not a business sense to actually discount any further. But if they're on their own DSLAMs, which is their own little boxes in exchanges, then maybe they've got an option there to actually discount. But resold, you can't do it.
Mm.
You can't sell something for less than you buy it for. It just doesn't work that way.
No, that's not the way it works.
Yeah. All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb here. Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan in this evening, just mulling over some of the election issues that seem to have slowly been putting themselves to bed. Now we've just got to see words take action, I guess, and see what happens. So the rollout of the schedule of the NBN, hopefully we're back into top gear on that. So, yeah, we'll start seeing it all rolled out across Australia in the not-too-distant future.
What's happening with the net filter?
Now, that's another good question, isn't it? Mr. Conroy's net filter is very much...
dead, buried and cremated.
Thank you for that, Graham. I knew you would say that.
A phrase.
And Mr. Written, spoken of by Tony Abbott Callaghan over there in the corner. Yes, gone the way of work choices, hasn't it?
Dear. Last we heard, he was going to do a review of our classification system. Because he was
Stephen, don't worry about it. You won't get through the Senate. Just put that one to bed, baby.
Because part of the net filter was that anything with refused that would be refused classification under the existing legislation would be blocked by the net filter. And then they thought to themselves, well, what is it and what isn't it that can and can't be refused classification? Mm. Let's have a look at our classification system. So that was a few months ago, and I think he was saying it was going to be at least 12 months before that actually occurred, and once that had occurred, and he'd consulted with key stakeholders and moved forward and all that good stuff.
But he does have, there is a valid point buried in there, because Australia's classification system is quite different to the classification systems in other parts of the world, in, that's used in Europe, and the one that's used in America, which is different again. And there's a lot of stuff that's generally available in Europe and in America that fits well and truly into their restricted or R or whatever category it might be that is completely refused classification in Australia. So we're a little bit out of step with the rest of the world on the classification system.
Mm.
So whether and it might be a good thing, I suppose that's why you do a review, but
it needs a revamp.
It does make it difficult for internet businesses who are trading in a global market.
It's funny you mentioned classifications. One of the organisations that I deal with on a fairly regular basis is Free TV Australia, Commercials Advice, in particular CAD. And they've been in the news this week for Simon Nitschke's commercial, which was going to be run and then got pulled at the last minute. But that's not what I'm talking about. They actually have many different variations of classification. Like we're familiar with the G's and the PG's and the M's and the MA15s. Well, they have W's and L's and all sorts of other classifications. And, you know, things like a W classification, for example, is a G, which is general exhibition but placement with care. So they've broken it down even further. So that's what the TV stations do. So... yeah, but as you're saying, Graham, I think, yeah, we need an overhaul in this country of the classification system, especially for computer games and things like that.
Oh, yes, that's a
not so much for films and videos
insane situation for games, yes.
Which is absolutely quite bizarre. But anyway.
And why are the rules so different for film as compared with print media and so on? And that's another thing that probably needs to be looked at as well. So there's a lot to look at.
ISP Internode has accused Telstra of giving more favourable wholesale pricing and terms to service providers, not rolling out competing DSLAM networks. This is interesting, wasn't it? This is what we were just talking about. Now, Telstra obviously aren't going to be drawn on these allegations, but as many Australians tuned in to an announcement by independent MP Bob Catter on the country's political future, Internode Managing Director Simon Hackett stepped up his campaign for Telstra to cut its wholesale port prices. And, of course, the best place to do this is on Whirlpool, which is probably Australia's... Well, actually, it had a DDoS attack recently, didn't it? That just goes to show what sort of clout it has in the industry. But most of the ISP CEOs tend to get up there and vent, don't they, on Whirlpool?
Now, DSLAM is a digital subscriber line access module. If you're wondering what Andrew's talking about, it's a piece of equipment
No. It's just...
What do you mean, no? Yes, it is.
Well, it is, but that doesn't tell anybody anything.
I'm about to tell everyone what it is. Look, to turn his microphone off, Andrew.
It's a big pile of ADSL no 2+ modems. It's the modem at the exchange that your modem at home connects to.
It's the equipment in the exchange that enables your telephone line to be used with ADSL technology.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. Well said.
Thank you.
What are we talking about?
Yes, and the other acronym that Andrew used, there's something else that he used in there just to explain it.
Can you remember that far back as your
attention? No, I can't remember that far back, yeah. No.
Internode and at least two other ISPs lodged complaints with the competition watchdog last month that sought intervention to resolve the dispute. And Hackett said that the variance in retail pricing amongst Telstra port resellers was not about negotiating skill. differences between the various ISPs. Now, look, one of the big upshots of what's going on with Telstra and its aggression in the marketplace, obviously, the NBN's bought half of its network, so it has to make some money somehow, so it's becoming fairly aggressive in the retail industry. But, yeah, I guess we're all reaping the benefits on some ISPs at the moment of having probably four times the amount of bandwidth that we used to have for a little bit less than what we paid before.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's what competition does in the marketplace, either good or bad. And there'll be people in the chat which will probably like to dispute, because they're very much onto this in the chat there tonight. I noticed who's been talking about it. So anyway, there you go. That's a little bit about what the other boys are up to, I guess, Internode and iiNet. While we're talking about things digital, Ericsson are going to bring digital TV to regional Australia. I don't know whether you heard about this, but Ericsson is the manufacturer who builds mobile phone base stations and the infrastructure behind our mobile networks.
Yeah, they do. Yep, Ericsson's a big name in that area.
Yeah, and the federal government has tipped some $160 million into satellite services that will provide free-to-air TV to 247,000 blacked-out households. It began switching off analog television to provide only digital signals from the 30th of June this year. Now, satellite TV will be delivered using Ericsson's latest video compression technology, which the vendor claims will help the ABC expand the reach of its high-definition and standard-definition digital programming. Now, we won't get started on that because I think it's all very much going back to standard-definition, the way it's all going. Hey, your mate's about to start. Remember Adam telling us all about Mate on Channel 7?
Seven Mate.
Yeah, that means the only true HD channel is really going to be 1HD. I guess, with their sport and everything else has just scaled down. Fraud. What did you call last week, Graham?
Fraud Def.
That's right.
They've got the little Seven Mate identifier on the channel if you rescan.
I think Fraud Def, I think I was trying to refer to 720 line high def, but.
Right, yes. 720 line high def is what you call.
As opposed
fraud
to
def.
1080 line high def, which is.
You can watch the extra 300 lines. It just makes it that bit sharper, doesn't it?
It does, yes.
Mm. All right. Whilst we're talking about broadband too, TPG counts uploads in ADSL 2 Plus changes. Did you know about this, Graham, considering I believe you are a TPG customer, aren't you?
Still, just for the current moment, yep. the last batch of plans I saw on TPG had, you could choose from plans that had uploads counted and some plans that didn't.
Well, this is their workaround, I think, about trying to claw a little bit back of all their giving that they've done the other day, because traditionally a lot of these ISPs only measured what you downloaded, not what you uploaded. But obviously with the increase in bandwidth, there's going to be more uploads because the only way you can use that bandwidth is use your peer-to-peer technology. So not unless you're an avid streamer or something like that and listen to everything. You couldn't use terabytes just listening to radio all the time, could you?
Be a lot of radio.
It would be a lot of radio.
The five radios live in the house running 24/7.
That's correct.
Yeah.
A lot of kids in the house too. So there you go, TPG. Changed its ADSL 2 Plus plans to include uploads. Shift the off-peak period out by half an hour and downgrade the shaping speed.
Well, TPG's plans have always been all over the place with their off-peak period. They're different, even in the same sort
they're
of
not
generation
alone there.
Of plans.
Others do it too.
They'll have one plan that off-peak starts at 3 o'clock and another plan where the off-peak starts at 2 o'clock. I think they're just trying to spread the load a little bit. I think that's probably reasonable. Just looking at the TPG page now, it says downloads and uploads counted on all ADSL 2 Plus plans. Downloads only counted on ADSL 2 Plus with the VoIP. So if you bundle a voice over IP service with your ADSL 2 Plus with TPG, you get your free uploads.
Is that a naked DSL service, Graham? Is that
no, so? They say on all ADSL
on
2 Plus.
So not necessarily naked.
Interesting. So I'm on an iiNet plan at home, which is ADSL 2 Plus, which is naked DSL.
Yeah.
And
you've probably got a...
I do. I have
metered... Because most naked DSL customers get a VoIP service.
That's right, which is what I've got.
Yeah.
And I have metered uploads.
There you go.
So it's different.
Yeah. Mm. There's always going to be lots and lots of these little differences, one ISP to another, and even within an ISP, you've got to watch exactly what the terms are on a plan to work out whether it's good or not. And that's where Whirlpool can really help.
It's a great site, isn't it?
Yeah.
And you can actually talk to CEOs
yep, and if
of companies.
And if you can't really understand good. It, you can just post a request and someone who does understand it will explain it.
All right. This is Tech Talk Radio. We'll be back with more after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Remember when
Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago, listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03-8682-8836. The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03-8682-8836. That's 03-8682-8836. Call now.
But we've run out of steak knives. If you've seen some of the stuff on YouTube, it looks a bit strange.
Whilst it is a high-def machine, it's only 720p.
Fraud-def.
Yeah, fraud-def.
Yeah, exactly.
Take note, Apple, HDMI output cable and carrying case.
Why would I want an Apple TV without a hard drive?
What you're describing is bloatware. The handset formerly known as the iPhone.
Entertaining.
I don't like spam.
Informative.
There are public VPN services.
Independent.
They've run up to, what, 400, 500?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Ah, yes, you are. Welcome back. I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron's in this evening. Dr. Graham in. Can I just say, too, that I'm really enjoying my move away from the Apple iPhone and now moving towards the HTC Android. You really sold me up on that, Dr. Ron. I'm glad you did.
Very good. Very good. I'm glad you're enjoying
apps
it.
On there. I'm finding a lot of really useful apps that are out there. And it's also interesting to note, too, that just the move away, or should I say the move towards Android, the operating system, is directly proportional to the move away from the Apple operating system on a, how should you say, a direct correlation is probably the best way of putting it.
Can you do everything on your Android that you could do on your iPhone?
To a degree.
Have you found anything that's lacking?
There's one application that I really love, but that's a developer's thing. It's not so much a technological thing that's lacking. I just had one application on the iPhone which did all my, you know, I could check all my accounts with one click of a button from my broadband to my mobile phones to absolutely everything. Now I have to do that on individual apps. But other than that, no, I'm finding the Snapdragon processor in the HTC Desire is just terrific.
Nice. Very and fast. Yeah. Nice and responsive.
Yep, and it even goes through batteries faster than the iPhone does.
Oh, really?
So, but no. The reason why I mentioned that, because you're probably wondering, why on earth is he talking about that? Well, Apple has resumed work on iPhone... Adobe has resumed work on iPhone development. Now, you mentioned this in the news this evening, that I believe Apple are going to relaxing. I'm not really 100% sure what they're doing, but Adobe have got all excited again, and they're starting to do dev work for the iPhone now.
Yeah, getting Flash ready to put on the iPhone.
Yeah, I thought that'd be over Steve's dead body, but obviously not. Adobe has announced it will restart its development on its packager for iPhone after Apple announced it was relaxing the App Store rules. The Adobe package for iPhone tools has been made available via the Flash Professional CS5 package and allowed developers to create applications easily for iOS.
Well, developers were...
That moon that goes around Jupiter.
No. Oh, I got hate mail during the week about that as well from...
I know, I saw.
And I said something silly last week about iOS, so it was a
all
moon around Mars or something, and yeah. Then we're correcting myself. No, it's Io is the name of the moon. It's not around Mars. It was around... I got corrected. Someone emailed me and said, Dr. Ryan...
I think you're looking for either Jupiter or Saturn.
Yeah, one of them.
One of those big gas giants. One of those.
One of the big giants. Yeah. Yes, yes. Look, developers have sort of been banned for a long time.
Io is one of the moons of Jupiter, actually.
Jupiter. Sorry. Jupiter, not Mars. Yeah, it's not iOS.
Try again.
Yes. Developers have sort of been banned for a long time from using Flash. Steve said, Mr. Jobs, he who is all Apple, he said, no, Flash, never the twain shall meet. But now, developers are free to do what they like, pretty much.
Yeah, but does that mean it's going to get through the App Store?
Well,
seriously, I'm not going to say that because it'll probably happen, but I suspect that it will only be when the first Flash thing gets through the App Store that I'll believe it.
Yeah.
I'm a climate denier.
Look, I think that what you were saying before the start of the program is very true. There's developers probably leaving Apple, writing for the Apple platforms in droves and moving to the Android as a platform.
Yes, we were talking about this before we came on air tonight, weren't we?
Yeah. Because they're not restricted. They can do what they like and they can make the applications available. People can download them from the Android market and off you go. They're not subject to the same sort of
rigorous scrutiny
that you are in the Apple App Store. Now, whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. The jury's still out. Certainly, Apple wants to protect its users and they want Apple wants its users to have the best possible experience possible on its devices. So there is a level of quality control there, which is always protected iPhone users.
I drop tested my Android HTC device during the course of the week from the car onto the road.
When you say you drop tested it, you let go of your device.
I did. And it, and it survived very well.
It accelerated at acceleration due to gravity.
It did. It got G-forced out of the door, and I thought, oh, that's the end of that. But no, to its, it came up with just a minor little scratch. So very impressed with the device from a physical point of view. So
good, good.
Anyway, and the screen protector is really good too. But anyway, that's another story. Yes, however, Apple decided a few months ago that it didn't want Flash to be used in the creation of apps and rejected all those creating using this tool. So I don't know what's going on. I really don't. As I say, I'll wait until we see what happens when it comes through the App Store, whether we actually see something that resembles Flash. But then again, HTML5's not far off.
Warlock in our chat room says they will not have Flash on iPhones.
See, there you go.
Apple never said you will have Flash on iPhones. Now, what they've said is that they'll ease restrictions for developers of applications to pave the way for third-party tools. So people are saying, well, it means we could use Flash.
Yeah.
But you're right. It's got to get onto the App Store, doesn't it?
But as soon as something gets through and gets onto a device, I'll be convinced. But at this point in time,
it may be a meet halfway thing. Didn't Adobe say that they were going to start working on something, which means, you know, maybe they're going to meet Apple halfway and write something Flash, you know, Flash enabled that does meet their requirements.
Maybe. i9 beta's scheduled for release shortly.
Internet Explorer 9, the Microsoft web
Microsoft
browser.
Microsoft, as I alluded to in the opening of the show this evening. There's a bit of a do on in Melbourne on Thursday, which we're going for brekkie, actually. They've invited us along to brekkie, for those who can attend, in the city, and they're going to show us their wares. They're going to drop it down, and we're going to see IE9 exposed for all of its good, now, indifferent things.
This has been pushed as the most standards-compliant browser that Microsoft have brought out.
Yeah, well, I'll see that when I start developing for it, too.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting, won't it?
Yes. I remember the good old days of IE6, and some people still remember the days of IE6, and then it became a little bit more compliant, and yes, look where we are today. IE9. Anyway, scheduled for launch very shortly. Big do here in Melbourne on Thursday morning. I'm going to go take the little recorder along, do some grabby things and have
good.
A chat and see what they got, and I'll report back next Monday about it.
We might be able to hear some of that stuff next Monday.
Yeah, Gordon Ramsay's cooking breakfast for us, apparently.
Is he?
Yeah. You should come to these things.
I should. You're right. Where's my invitation? No, I'll come along.
Okay, good.
I'll go crash it.
Absolutely.
Mozilla's got a new Firefox web browser out too, by the way.
Oh, yeah,
what
about 3.7?
They're up to 3.6.9.
Oh, no, nearly there.
They've said that it fixes some security vulnerabilities and adds a new feature as well, which is a technical thing for handling some web traffic and trying to stop clickjacking or hijacking stuff on websites, displaying it in frames it shouldn't be displayed in. But go to getfirefox.com if you want to download the latest Mozilla web browser, which is free and easy to use.
And also supposed to be very standards compliant as well.
It is.
They're getting better.
It is.
They're getting better.
Hopefully they're getting closer together so that things will work across various websites.
Hopefully they can cross the streams very shortly and we won't implode or whatever happens.
No, cross the streams. What's your web browser of choice, Graham?
Chrome.
Google Chrome. Andrew?
Depends what I'm doing, because some sites just don't work in some browsers. Traditionally, I have Chrome set as my default launch, if you know what I mean. But then Chrome doesn't handle things like Telstra very well, so I have to resort to the incumbent's browser for that.
Yeah, I'm exactly the same. I have Chrome and Internet Explorer as a backup to it.
Yep.
And yes, I don't have Firefox installed on my machine.
I find a lot of the plugins are now compatible, like things like Xmarks and things like that, which I use on my work machines.
There's a Chrome version of the add-on, yeah.
Yeah. It all talks beautifully across between devices, which I think is really good. I think it even talks to the Droid stuff. But anyway, hey, let's just change the subject briefly. One thing which is near and dear to my heart in particular is 3D television, for no other reason than it's a very interesting medium.
You've got one now?
I do have one now. I haven't used it yet. I do have one. It's in one of the production suites.
I've got to come and have a look.
Yeah. It's one of the new Bravia systems and stuff like that, which...
Can we all come over and watch the grand final?
No, because I haven't got glasses. Oh. I didn't get glasses for it.
Right.
I just needed a screen.
That's good.
I needed a panel.
Is it that expensive? You couldn't afford the extra $29.95 for a set of glasses?
I haggled.
Yeah, you haggled.
I haggled and I didn't want the glasses. I didn't want the PlayStation. It came with it. Then I'd have three and I don't need a third one.
Did it come with a PlayStation?
Yeah, it came with a PlayStation.
Really? Not in the end. Not in the end, but no. It was going to.
It started off at $2,500 and then it came down based on, I don't need this, I don't need that.
Well, for a lot of people, that's going to be a very sensible option because when they're buying their high-def television, they're going to need a Blu-ray player and that's one of the best ways to get a Blu-ray player is the PlayStation 3.
Yeah. Yeah. What about Kinect? Like Jeff was talking about last week. I quite like the sound of that. The new Microsoft box, and they've got their own, you know, video streaming stuff. It's all very, there's so many to choose from these days. It's ridiculous. Like, Dr. Wong, you showed me your Windows Media 7 system.
Yes.
On the weekend. Now, that was very impressive.
Windows just to clarify, Windows 7 running the newest Windows Media Center, which is very much improved on the previous version.
That was very impressive. It worked. The pictures were watchable. It could record. It
more than watchable. They were quite good.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I was suitably. So there's so many choices for consumers out there. You just got to work out which way you want to pull it all in. Now you had iView on there too, didn't you?
I did. I've got iView as a shortcut on the desktop.
Now so that's just a link to the web page, the ABC
right.
web page.
It just
through a web browser, isn't it?
It's exactly what it is. It just brings up a web browser and connects to iView.
Yep, non-metered,
and I can catch up on all my ABC television viewing that I like to.
Yeah, as opposed to using the Bravia internet TV. Don't. That's metered.
Yeah.
As discussed,
you could still do that with the Bravia. It's just that it's going to the special Sony website or the Sony proxy server to do that.
Have you seen 3D yet?
I haven't. No, not my television.
Oh, you're not missing much.
No.
Graham?
Have I seen which?
3D TV.
No.
Yeah. Okay.
No.
It's certainly interesting, but you've got to bear in mind, too, that
I know someone who bought one, didn't get any glasses.
Yeah. But, look, sport's really where it's at. I don't know whether... I think ACMA have got the test channel still up there on channel 40, I think it is, on free-to-air television around the country at the moment, so...
Yeah, they're leaving the networks with the... are able to do test broadcasts until the football grand finals, yeah, the AFL selective. And the NRL grand finals.
Mm.
And then they're going to stop any more 3D tests until they review the results.
Yeah. How do they do that? I would have thought they would have seen the results and they know what it's like.
I have no idea.
They must have pulled a bit of bandwidth out of somewhere to find a bit.
I'm sure they've got a form they need to fill in. Probably several.
In triplicate. No doubt. But look, it's interesting. There's some interesting stuff in the media at the moment. There's been a Nielsen survey which shows high interest in 3D TV, but low interest in paying for it. Well... that's pretty much sums it up. It's one of those mediums, I think, where, you know, you guys talk about watching the footy in 3D. Well, let me tell you, it's going to be a bit of a non-event because 3D only really works on stuff where you've pictures where you've got good information in the foreground, you know, like a shrub or a glass on a bench in the very close foreground, and then in the background you've got your action. So it gives you that sense of depth. But if you don't have that, you don't have a sense of depth.
It doesn't make a lot of sense to me because for the reasons that you've just highlighted, Andrew, I think that a 3D production has to be very heavily produced and managed. You have to have everything set up correctly so you get
you
the proper 3D
effect.
You
need a stereoscopic engineer. And you'll be interested to note too, I had a very interesting dinner at the pub the other night with a few outside broadcast guys from a particular organisation, and the 3D broadcasts are completely separate compared to a standard 2D broadcast, so it's just doubling of infrastructure. They can't even take... well, they probably can, but they don't take a split out of any of the other 3D cameras. I thought they might have, but no, they don't. Completely separate system altogether in an outside broadcast. Should get him on the show, actually. Be good for a chat.
Now, why do they do that? Why can't you just use a...
there is a very good reason for it.
Because use the left eye of the 3D one.
That was my question. They need a stereographer. There's a new role being invented for people that look after aligning cameras in a stereo space. But yes, it's a very good question that you ask. I might ask him down the track. But he said that no, everything's completely...
well, that's all
separate.
We do with our feature films. If, you know, when you watch the 2D version of a 3D film, you're just watching one eye of it.
Mm. Yes,
just
true.
Watching the left channel, or might be the right channel, I don't know which.
Yes. And you've got to bear in mind, too, that everyone's becoming very, I guess, technically aware of a good picture these days.
Mm.
And you'll notice that if you watch 3D television on free-to-air, it's half the resolution, half the picture quality that you would expect.
Because you have to fit two pictures in for each picture.
Yeah. And they have. We've spoken about this, so we won't go into
that. One for the left and one for the right.
Absolutely. And then you need the glasses, and then it's sort of,
I wonder if... at some point, and I'm sure it will happen, that someone will invent... because the two pictures must be very, very similar, the left and the right channel pictures. There must be a lot of duplicated information. I reckon there would be a way that someone could invent a compression algorithm that creates a much more intelligently compressed stream so that you can have all that resolution back.
Yeah, you're right. And then there's just another format to add to the collection.
Well, it'll just be, you know, the next thing after MPEG-4.
Well, it's probably what they put on a Blu-ray disc now and some of these new 3D Blu-rays that are coming
out. Well, I don't think it is at the moment. I think at the moment it's just two MPEG-4 streams. But
dual stream.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you were to take information from both streams...
See, dual streams
to do the compression. Why?
Better quality.
But if you... No, because you need to have room there for two full streams.
Yeah, but on a Blu-ray you can. In free-to-air television you can't. You don't have the bandwidth.
Well, it depends on how much time you want on your Blu-ray, doesn't it?
Yeah, but normally there's enough space on that to fit a feature on and some.
Well,
Anyway, we could go on about this for ages.
I think last week in the news we said that the Australian Communications and Media Authority, ACMA, which is the government body responsible for issuing licences for such things, they said that they weren't going to issue any more experimental 3D type licences to the TV networks
after the football finals.
After the AFL and the NRL, they said that's going to be it, and then they're going to reassess. They're going to have a look at all the feedback from the networks and from viewers and everybody involved.
Yep, and fill in a form. Put in a filing cabinet and stuff like that.
And
yeah.
Channel 40 is still on my television set at home, so it's still
cynical,
there.
Yes.
Stuck in a disused lavatory.
That's right.
With a sign on the door saying, beware the lavatory. Absolutely. Adam Turner is our regular correspondent when he's not appearing on certain Media Watch programs. He likes talking about all sorts of things.
Poor Adam.
Come on now.
Are you ever going to let him forget it?
I haven't said anything about it until now.
Mm.
It was good. You got the Tech Talk Radio logo on Media Watch. I'm very proud of him for that. I think that was just a sensational.
Well done, Adam.
True.
Any publicity is good publicity.
Correct. Oh, correct. Anyway, let's talk about the view from the couch this week. There's been a lot of conjecture about what's going to happen with AFACT and iiNet, and of course, there's an international body which is called the ACTA. These acronyms. Anyway, I'll let Adam tell you all about it. Here's this week's view from the couch.
As iiNet battles with Australia's copyright police, plans for an international anti-piracy treaty are under attack. Around the world, there's been a push to force internet service providers to disconnect customers believed to be illegally downloading content. ISPs which don't comply would be held legally responsible for those customers' actions. Such demands would not require solid evidence or a court order, just an accusation by the copyright police that the customer has done wrong. It's often described as the three strikes rule, a couple of warnings and then you're out. Spearheading this push is the confidential anti-counterfeiting trade agreement, currently being negotiated behind closed doors by a number of countries, including Australia. Leaked details of the ACTA initially revealed a strong push to force the countries involved to introduce a three strikes rule. Last week, the European Parliament set its sights on the ACTA negotiations, demanding greater transparency in the negotiation process and asserting that ISPs should not be held liable for data sent through their networks. It also declared that ACTA should, quote, not force limitations upon judicial due process or weaken fundamental rights such as freedom of expression and the right to privacy. Now, the Parliament's written declaration isn't binding, but it sends a clear message that governments don't intend to stand by while backroom deals are done, which impact on their citizens' rights to concepts such as privacy and due process. Well, at least for some countries. It seems that Senator Conroy is still pushing ahead with plans to introduce mandatory filtering in Australia, even though it's got absolutely no hope of getting through Parliament now that the Greens control the Senate and Labor is reliant on independents and Greens in the lower house. Why Labor is pushing ahead with such a crazy idea that perhaps almost got kicked out of government is just beyond me. Now, while the European Parliament at least is making such grand statements about protecting privacy and due process, last year the European Union backed down on plans to foil the three-strike system. Long-running negotiations over the EU telecoms package saw members of Parliament drop amendments that would have made internet access a fundamental right. Instead, it said there must be a possibility of judicial review for those disconnected, but not automatic court oversight. This still left the door open for the ACTA treaty to introduce a three-strikes policy. It seems that international concern about this secret treaty is making an impact, as the latest leaked draft of the ACTA treaty appears to remove most, if not all, of the requirements that countries impose third-party liability on ISPs. A watered-down ACTA treaty could be bad news for the Australian Federation Against Copyright Theft, or AFACT, as it continues to fight in the courts over iiNet's refusal to disconnect customers accused of illegally downloading files. AFACT is appealing against an initial decision in favour of iiNet. A lot is riding on that decision now that AFACT may not have the ACTA treaty to fall back on if the iiNet appeal fails. One thing's for sure, interesting times lie ahead.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Interesting times indeed.
Yeah, we don't want to listen. We don't want to live in interesting times, do we, necessarily? But sometimes we're put in
ideally
that,
not.
Sometimes we're put in that situation.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. Oh.
Thanks, Adam.
Yes. Very interesting. Mm. The plot thickens there.
Always comes up with something good, doesn't he?
When will iiNet and AFACT finally put everything to bed and get on with life, is the question?
When we have a something like iTunes or the and those sorts of music stores that are now everywhere for video.
Mm.
When it's...
Yeah, you're right, actually.
When there's a practical and simple and affordable solution for watching video online. That's... Or downloading your favourite TV shows or whatever it might happen to be.
Bring on the NBN, I say. Then yeah. People will be able to do that.
Well, the NBN will be a technology that will enable this that sort of technology to work. Exactly right.
Yeah. So, if you live in the regional areas, you'll probably get it before our city slickers, which will be good. Mm. I think it's about time when the tables return, because we've got a lot of listeners in rural parts of Australia, Cairns and Katherine and Goulburn and all sorts of places.
It's a bit unfair that they miss out.
It is. It is. And they have to put up with things like satellite, which just works one way, really, doesn't it?
Especially since some of these rural areas are really the areas in Australia that are keeping the country going at the moment.
In a lot of respects, a lot of state governments are trying to decentralise.
I mean, where would Australia be if we weren't digging up... of Western Australia,
we wouldn't be where we are today, would
Western
we?
Western Queensland,
yeah, exactly. Discussion of this the other day, you know, it's half the reason why we came through the GFC as well as we did, is because China just didn't flinch as much, that's what I was looking for, and we could keep digging up the ground and selling it to them.
Mm.
So,
but we can't dig up Western Australia forever. We're going to have to...
What happens when we hit Perth?
That's right. So, yes, we do need... to start developing some new technologies and things in this country, and to make use of our well-known innovative skills in Australia.
Absolutely.
Dr. Carl, who's a well-known ABC personality.
Yes.
Have you heard him
media
talk?
Media commentator, pseudoscience area.
I know you've got your own personal opinions about Dr. Carl and his pseudoscience, but he does have...
He's a very good science communicator. Yes.
He is a very good communicator, and he's made...
Same with Robin Williams. Have you listened to the science show?
Robin Williams is an excellent science communicator without the reservations I have about Dr. Carl.
But Dr. Carl's made very funny comments
not
about
that Robin
us.
Williams, the other one.
Yes.
Not he's the touring, speaking of the other one.
Oh, is he really?
But that's another story, not for this show. Off you go.
So have you got something you're trying to say there, Doctor?
I'm trying. I'll get there. It's okay. We've got about 40 minutes, so I'll...
We've got to roll
there.
A CD in a minute.
Well, go on then.
He's said...
I promise I won't interrupt you again.
Okay, he said...
You can have a free run now.
I will. I'll have a free run. He said very funny things about digging up Western Australia.
Did he?
Yeah, along the lines of, in 100 years' time, people are going to say, you know, would you believe they used to pull the coal out of the ground? Like... He thinks that it's there, obviously, for a reason, and, you know, we're just burning it.
Yeah.
Same with, you know, all the fossil fuels and uranium and such things, and people will look back in horror in 100 years' time, 200 years' time, they'll say, uranium, can you believe they were digging that up?
Yes.
What they were doing with that? You know, didn't they understand what it was doing in the ground?
That's exactly right. Well, I was making a similar point about the brown coal deposits in Victoria, that if you leave it in the ground, you can actually do some very intelligent things with it. Mm. But, yeah. Yeah, no, well, he's got a point.
He's on the right track.
This is Tech Talk Radio. chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we're all at the moment if you're listening live, or come visit us at the forum, as Graham said, if you're not listening to us live. down the track.
Yep.
There's good stuff there in the forum.
Forum's the place to go to read Dr. Ron's excellent weekly show notes as well.
Absolutely. Back with more in a moment. Oh, sorry.
Oh, and I'm going to say subscribe to his Twitter feed to find out when the show notes get put up every week.
Speaking of Twitter.
Yeah.
I was on Twitter during the course of the week, as you do.
Take your hand off that CD player. We're not going to need it for another 10 minutes.
Finger away from that play button. Come on. Twitter.com/TechTalkRadio. Yeah, tech_talk_radio.
You know how Twitter recommends who you should follow these days?
Yes, it does.
You got a laugh out of it too, because I had to do a frame grab of it and send. But it recommended to follow this character called GC246 or something like that.
GC248, yeah. And Andrew said, what's the point of following him? It's not going
to... Look, one day I'll say something.
And it will be profound.
No, just, yeah, watch it. It'll come, and don't miss it when it comes. It'll be absolutely brilliant.
So you won't need to follow him. It'll be in IT News, and it'll be on IT Wire, and it'll be in ZDNet, so... Yes, Graham tweets will be the headline. Andrew, press
play. Can I press play now?
Yes, please do.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Let's talk a little bit about what happened during the course of the week.
This is a new experience, agreeing with
Senator
Conroy.
It's hard, isn't it? And
Julia.
The more they lock it down, the more people will work around it.
Is it?
I don't know.
You know something I don't know?
No, I don't. I just tried to unlock Andrew's phone with my passcode.
If you're going to cross the road, look both ways.
Entertaining.
So no more pub runs.
Informative.
Look, I agree with you, Graham.
Independent.
I can feel a churn coming on.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I mentioned the word Optus, so I think you've thrown me off.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk Radio.
So where were we before you maybe pushed the button? We were talking about Twitter, weren't we?
We were. Twitter.com/TechTalkRadio. So it's tech_talk_radio. It's how you can follow the Tech Talk Radio team's updates.
Now, speaking of good achievements in Twitter, some people have fallen from grace from Twitter in recent times. Politicians and the likes. But let's just talk a little bit about Stephanie Rice. Do you know her?
Stephanie Rice.
She's the Australian swimming champion, and she tweeted something that she shouldn't have the other day, and it got picked up globally.
Really?
Yes. And anyway, as a result of tweeting things that you shouldn't tweet...
Why shouldn't she have tweeted it?
Well, I'll let you be the judge on that. I'm not going to pass judge on morals there, but I'm just going to say that she tweeted something that potentially wasn't the best thing to tweet. As a result, she lost her sponsorship with Jaguar.
So why is it Jaguar's business what she sends to her Twitter followers?
Well, if you saw what she tweeted, it probably wasn't in the most of...
I haven't seen what she tweeted.
Okay, well, we won't go into it on the radio,
I do have an issue with this, though.
You do, but playing the devil's advocate, she's representing Jaguar if she's got a sponsorship.
It's an endorsement for... Yeah, basically...
Did she tweet as Stephanie Rice _ Jaguar or something like that? Was that a... Was she working for Jaguar? Was it...
No, but if she's a sponsor of Jaguar, then she is a, how should
she's
we say,
sponsored
a,
by
a
Jaguar.
Custodian, or she's a spokesperson.
So does that mean that...
You become that when you're that sort of way inclined.
So that means that at any point, no matter what she does, she's representing Jaguar.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Hmm. If you're sponsored by that particular company, then that's it. You're supposed to wear your cap on all times and have your photo taken in front of the Jaguar board and all that when you do your press releases. Anyway, if you heard her on the radio, she was quite upset about it. But we're not talking about the issue of what she texted, but it's just the...
No, the point isn't what she texted. The point is, should that affect other things?
Well, to a degree. But my point is that this is what social networking is doing to our cultures, where people, if you shoot your mouth off, if you're watching something through the bottom of a glass or something gets your goat and you're so passionate about it, once it's out there in cyberspace, it's just very tricky to actually pull back. If you might live to regret it. And I think Steph did there. Nice sort of unfortunate incident. But anyway, there you go. That's a bit more Twitter. Facebook's just as bad. I still don't have a Facebook account. You still haven't given me the password, Dr. Ron.
No. I'll give you the password. Let's just briefly mention, because we sort of alluded to it earlier in the program. We'll briefly mention what we're talking about before with Adam Turner. Adam had...
It's a very similar situation.
Very similar situation a couple of weeks ago where he made some tweets on election night. We're all watching the election coverage.
Yeah.
And he said some things there, which he later regretted.
We all do.
Which we all do from time to time. But unfortunately, someone took offence at what he said, and they made a complaint to Fairfax, who Adam writes for.
Yeah.
But
Adam's not employed by Fairfax. They just buy some of his work.
Correct.
Correct. And he's not sponsored by Fairfax like Stephanie's sponsored by Jaguar.
He's a freelancer.
That's correct.
Like we all are.
He's a freelance journalist. He just writes articles and sells them to different people.
He's not a political commentator, so who cares?
Well, even if he is, he wasn't commentating. It wasn't a news piece that he wrote on Twitter. It was just a
personal opinion.
A personal opinion, exactly.
Yeah. Look, he regretted that he'd done it because it caused some problems. But then the stupid thing was that the person that complained about the language that Adam used, then used Twitter to say, ha, 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 I got Adam Turner in trouble, which is just completely childish and stupid in my opinion. But look, I just think that the point that we have to make is that what you say on Twitter, whether it's Adam or the other person or whether it's Stephanie Rice or anybody, people are watching, and once it's out there, it's out there.
Yeah.
So just be mindful of the fact if you're worried that you think that if you tweet, it's going to be associated, you're sort of like, you know, if you're associated with an organisation or an agency or something, just be mindful of that, I suppose, is the moral of the story.
Yeah, well, that's true. And you have to be aware that anything you put on Facebook or anything you tweet, that, you know, a future employer is going to be able to search it on Google and the Wayback Machine, they're going to be able to find it. And they're going to form their opinion of you partly on that.
It's not the future employer that's the problem, it's the future in-laws.
That too. I don't think Adam would have a particular problem with people reading his Twitter feed overall and making
context,
a judgment about what sort of a person he is based on it. That's right,
Put into context of all the other tweets that were going on at the same time by the same people, but people across the world and globally and other...
I think it is a bit rich for someone who doesn't even employ a person... Yeah, it's, you know, an organisation that just happens to buy some of your work to try and have that much say over how you behave when you're not working for them.
But again, playing devil's advocate, Adam is representing that organisation.
No, he's
because
not.
Well, he is if he's
no,
published.
No, he's not.
If he's published,
not at all.
He is, Graham, if he's published by them. If he's got his name there in their publications and he's published by them, then people will associate him with that organisation. I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm saying that is what has happened.
Well, so, I think that that is wrong.
I think it's wrong.
He doesn't represent Fairfax just because Fairfax occasionally buys some of his work.
Well, I think,
or even regularly buys some of his work.
I think it's wrong, but I'm explaining that's what has happened, and that's what people do. They associate one with the other. That's what
you
need.
People need to be smarter about how they understand the way the world works.
Oh, look, people are dumb. People do need to be smarter about this sort of stuff.
One person I follow, and I know you follow him too, is Chaz Lick. From the Chaser Boys.
Chaz from the Chaser, yeah.
Chaz from the Chaser,
now, some of the stuff he's tweeted has been absolutely hilarious, but I would say that it's no different to what other people have tweeted, other journalists, other people.
Yeah, is he representing the ABC when
does
that? Well, no, I don't think he is.
He's unemployed, apparently.
I don't think he is either. But
he's unemployed. I read that as personal comment that he's making.
Exactly.
The same as Adams was.
Yeah, yeah.
It's an interesting line, isn't it? It's a fine line between pleasure and the internet. Now, speaking of things like that, Facebook...
What I did enjoy before you move on was on the Chaser, the twits that scrolled across the bottom of the
screen. The fake ones? Absolutely
They were hilarious.
Absolutely
hilarious. Well, they had their fake tweets, didn't they?
Yes, they did. That was...
fake Twitter feed.
Yeah, actually,
I enjoyed that a lot, you know, as much as I did watching the rest of the show.
I actually had to go back and watch it a few times to read the tweets, because everything was happening very quickly. Andrew Hansen, with his lyrics of some of his songs, is just amazing. Very clever gentleman.
Yes.
Facebook launches a page discovery browser. How about this? Just speaking of bad things.
Browser.
What on earth does that mean?
Facebook has launched a new
way. You mean a search box?
Well, shush and I'll read it. Facebook has launched a new way to discover Facebook's popular pages called Browser. It shows icons of pages that are popular in a user's country and the fact in which pages which are popular amongst their unique friends and network. So basically, it's just going to pull it all together and show it to you as a browsery type sort of thing.
Okay.
Facebook are running out of ideas, aren't they?
Graham's been red carded here, by the way. So
he's pushed his chair back. He's gone back to the speaker in the corner.
He's on the naughty speaker.
You can't get a word in on this panel at times. You really can't. Not to mention the chat.
The rough and tumble of the TikTok panel.
You can come back anytime you like. He's off mic now.
I'll come back.
You're feeling a bit off mic.
Feeling better now? Anyway, the browser also shows you friends similar to you, leaderboard displaying with which friends you share the most mutual likes. This is scary stuff. It's currently unclear how users can...
I don't need Facebook to tell me that.
I know, exactly. It's currently unclear how users can navigate to utilities other than through the URL Facebook pages browser.php. But anyway, you're a Facebook user.
There's a lot that's unclear.
Oh.
Yes, I am a Facebook user.
Can we talk about Optus? Have you moved on?
I know that look, my words will be falling on deaf ears here at the moment on this panel tonight, but
what?
Has anybody here ever wished that they could like a tweet? Now, people in the chat room might comment about that. No?
Well, no, I like lots of tweets. I don't need mechanical assistance to enjoy things.
A tweet is in the moment. You don't need to like it or dislike it. It's like,
Have you ever felt that you want to share with people that you like a particular tweet in the same way that you like Facebook statuses or wall posts?
I just did. I told my friends in the studio here that I liked some tweets that...
Yeah, but if I tweet something and you want to tell everyone that you like it...
I'll tell everybody that counts.
You'll retweet it, maybe.
Oh, I think that might be going a bit
far. That might be going a bit far, yes.
That would involve sending a tweet. Sorry, go on.
You're a Twitter... You use Twitter, but you're a Twitter consumer rather than a Twitter content creator, aren't you?
I'm what in the old days would have been called a lurker.
Mm.
Yeah.
Warlock says most people who like a tweet will retweet it. That's very true.
That's true, yeah.
Very true.
That means that's like a thumbs up.
And Warlock also says, yes, Dr. Ron, I'd like to like a tweet. Yeah, you see, he gets it.
Okay,
oh,
he gets it.
There you go. Well, he gets it. Do you talk to him?
I will. Okay. Warlock will open up a special, private message session there. I'll go and sit on the naughty speaker. Andrew, off you go.
Optus, you mentioned this earlier on in the evening, being hit by the ACCC case on supersonic broadband.
Optus, what's going
on? I find this amazing. Like, what was their last one? They've unlimited. They've moved on from unlimited. Now they're calling it supersonic. The competition watchdog has filed a case against Optus over claims of supersonic broadband in an advertisement for its newly upgraded HFC cable, the black stuff hanging in the street. So it was the second case in 4 months to be filed against Optus over claims in its broadband advertising. These guys are just deliberately out to upset the ACCC at the moment, surely.
I'm not absolutely sure that the ACCC mightn't have gone a step too far this time.
Oh, really?
Just looking at it. What are they complaining about? The word supersonic.
They're complaining that a voiceover in the Optus advertisement announces, quote, the introduction of new supersonic broadband and explains that, quote, there is now no limit to what you can achieve.
No limit to what you can achieve means nothing. It's a meaningless phrase. It doesn't say it's unlimited downloads or anything like that. I think that's reasonable.
You think that that's a reasonable comment for Optus to
No limit to what you can achieve. That's not a claim of anything. That's just vague nonsense.
The ACCC is alleging that Optus has not sufficiently or clearly disclosed a number of qualifications in relation to these statements.
Mm. Anyway, maybe they're just working on the limited factor and unlimited factor again. Maybe it wasn't defined by the federal court recently in the other day. Well, they haven't had the hearing yet, so maybe they just haven't got around to it. But anyway, that was Optus. Now, they're also getting into traffic. Did you know?
Are they?
Yeah, I couldn't believe this. Office extends
traffic. I can't get out of traffic.
No.
That's the problem.
But see, this technology that they're using in their traffic stuff has got me quite intrigued. Optus has extended the availability for a traffic application that measures the congestion of roads by sampling the location of road users' handsets periodically as they drove.
That's intelligent.
It is, but is it...
Did I say that again, slightly in my
feeling? Yeah, that's why I said it. Basically, Optus has extended the availability for a traffic application that measures the congestion of roads by sampling the location of road users' handsets periodically as they drove.
Okay.
So, obviously, it's chattering to a mobile phone sitting next to somebody, maybe measuring that they've only gone 10 foot and 3 inches on the eastern freeway.
The network can work out roughly where the phones are that are connected to a given base station. So they can work out how quickly they're moving. So if they work out there's a whole string of Optus handsets in roughly where that street is, and they're only moving at a very slow speed, then there must be lots of traffic congestion on that road.
You could draw that conclusion, couldn't you?
That's very
especially
sensible.
Especially at sort of 8:50 in the morning on a freeway or on a street.
A very intelligent use of the data that's already available in the network.
Well, the data service, which was launched last year, was opened up to consumers after previously being only available to organisations such as road traffic authorities. Optus piloted the system in late 2006, so they've been at it for a while, before launching the service for businesses and government organisations in June 2009, so 3 years to get to that stage. The service used cellular floating vehicle data. There's another acronym for the world of technology, which is licensed from a local arm of the British firm ITS. It was unclear how the system interfaced with Optus's back-end system, according to those speculating.
CFVDs.
CFVD. Not ED. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what happens to that, whether it comes out as an app on iPhones and thingy-bobs based on the Optus network. If you're with Optus, you get traffic. Everyone else used Google, but no others. How does Google work?
I was going to ask the same question. Where does Google get its traffic congestion information from?
I assume they buy them from local traffic information providers like everybody else does.
Because never get it on your GPS receiver.
Yeah, like you get exactly. There's already companies around that specialize in providing that data, and I'm sure that Google buy it from them like everybody else does.
It's a best guess, I reckon.
Maybe they will be able to buy it from Optus now.
Maybe.
Who knows?
Because there's red streets.
It's simply Optus entering that market, isn't it?
Well, potentially. But there's red streets where there's always been good traffic for me. The thing that's one of the other great things, if you ever listen to the traffic guys on the radio as you drive to work and they say there's a really slow issue somewhere,
By the time you hear it on the radio, it's too late. Yeah. Yep.
Oh, dear. All right. Another funny story that I thought interesting.
The Mad Minute?
Sort of. We've got a few minutes to kill.
Okay.
It's a clock.
Microsoft, and we'll take this to task with the guys when they when they come in and talk about Phone 7. That's our next chat.
Good. Is Jeff coming back?
Dave Glover's coming in next.
Dave Glover, okay.
He's
from Microsoft.
From Microsoft.
To talk about Windows Mobile 7.
Phone 7.
Windows Phone 7.
Now, it went RTM the other day, which stands for Ready to Market, which means they're ready to
manufacture.
Release to manufacture. There you go. But anyway, they...
So that means that people can start building phones with this built into it?
Apparently.
Means that any day now you'll be able to go down the street and buy one.
Well, not any day, but soon.
Any week.
We'll ask him when he's here.
Yeah.
I'm sure there'll be HTC devices and things like that come out, but we will. October 4. Is that a Monday? That'll be us. That's when he's in. You can check your calendars now. Set it in your calendars. I'll send out a tweet. You can put the thumbs up on it.
October 4 is a Monday.
Yeah, about that. The Microsoft people had a funeral parade for BlackBerry and iPhone. They didn't have a funeral parade. There was no mention of any of the Droid stuff, but there was photos.
They had one for Zune as well?
Well, no, Zune's pretty big in the US.
Oh, is it?
Oh, Zune is huge compared to what we have here. A Zune.
Did you see Zunes when you were over there?
No. I didn't seek them out, about them.
But you see people on a train or something wearing their iPods. Did you see anyone?
No, I didn't get any trains in the States.
Right.
Taxis and cars. Yeah. Anyway, yes, what were we talking about? Microsoft celebrating its Windows Phone 7 with a funeral parade for BlackBerry and iPhone, and they're wandering around the streets with a hearse and people carrying a huge, big, black, sort of square, rectangular-looking thing, which looks, for all intents and purposes, like an iPhone. And then they had Tony Bertuccio dancers doing Michael Jackson's Thriller. I couldn't work it out. What sort of publicity stunt is this?
But why would Microsoft be celebrating the downfall of the iPhone when all the iPhone users have moved to Android rather than Windows Mobile 7?
I reckon that's the reason why they didn't have Android there, because they reckon it's going to be a goer.
Mm.
But anyway, that was just something bizarre that happened a long way from here during the course of the week.
Warlock's making the point that the Zune wasn't released in Australia, which is probably why you don't see many of them over here.
It's a very valid point. Indeed,
it is a valid point.
Indeed. And Zathras in our chat room says gingerbread will be way cool.
What's gingerbread?
Is that the new... That's the next bit of Froyo and gingerbread
incarnation
together.
Incarnation of Android.
Oh, okay. Good.
I'm looking forward to that. I've become a really good... I'm very interested in this now. Hey, I found out the other reason too that some of the Telstra handsets using the Desire, Telstra haven't let them upgrade to frozen yogurt yet, to 4.2. That's another downside of buying the Telstra handset as opposed to the international one.
Hmm.
Anyway, pros and cons for everything. The other funny thing I thought during the week is, the new Apple devices that have come out on the market recently, the iPod Nano, to be precise, the little square music player. Some bright sparks come up with a digital watch application where it's just a clock face on the front of it.
Oh, I saw this.
And then you can get a bit of Velcro and the likes and make your own watch. And then you've got your Apple clock.
That should be the gadget of the week.
On your handset you're running around the place.
Because it's got a new display now, doesn't it? This new model. And we spoke about this last week.
It has.
And you can have four icons, but only four, and you can move them around wherever you want them. But yeah. Was that what JD was saying, I think?
Yes, you can. That's the four that you can move around. They're minimizing choice to avoid confusion for Apple users.
Just keep it simple using the KISS principle.
That's it. So, but you can't do that with the bigger ones. You might hurt yourself. But go easy with the little ones. That's a great idea, don't you think? Next thing, it'll be a bedside table clock. It'll go beep, beep in the morning. Turn itself on and do stuff like that.
Maybe. I saw an interesting article in the tech news as well about Seiko being about to release some watches that use an e-ink display.
What's e-ink?
It looks like paper. So the same sort of display that they use in the Kindle? Those sorts of book readers.
Oh.
So instead of having an LCD or a normal watch face, they have an e-ink watch face.
Zathras on our chat says that the new Nano was rumored to originally be a wristwatch. So we're going to get the Dick Tracy wristwatch thing happening now. It'll be a phone, it'll be a music player, it'll be everything.
Yeah, we've got it. We've had it as a gadget before.
We have.
Yeah, they're out
there.
That
was years ago. Maybe there's the new incarnation of it, which will be bigger, better, and faster. Maybe they could put a high-speed processor in it and away you go. The Snapdragon watch. Wouldn't that be good?
Yeah, I don't know. It'll have to be good or not.
Well, then, yeah, as the guys were saying in our correspondence, you started off earlier in the evening, you get your headsets, you got your good wireless headset plug into your thing, so... Be very much Dick Tracy looking feel, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. Would it be functional with it on your wrist? Because if I'm listening to music or if I'm walking around and talking on my phone, I've usually got my phone either in my pocket or I'm holding it to my head. If it was on your wrist, and you've got wires that you're trying to negotiate, you know, going to headphones.
Well, I think you
could do yourself a mischief if you weren't careful.
I think you'd run the wire up your sleeve.
You'd have to, wouldn't you?
I think that's what you'd do, or you'd use Bluetooth.
Bluetooth could work.
Bluetooth would be the go, I think.
Mm.
Microsoft also said sorry for its US cloud coverage. Sorry. Apparently, it had a bit of a bummer with its cloud recently.
Sorry.
Yep. Over the past few weeks, a large chunk of Microsoft's US cloud customers have discovered the pitfalls of depending on cloud service providers for greater uptime. Microsoft spokesman apparently said to customers they've had three recent outages, the last which occurred last week that affected its cloud-based business productivity online suite. And when you're relying on the cloud and it's not there, that would be fairly bad, wouldn't it? It
yes.
makes you think about going back to your own local server again if they have cloud outages.
Yes.
Early days, do you think, Graeme?
You're making me nervous.
Am I? Sorry, I'll move on then.
Are you moving people to the cloud?
No, my business is in the cloud.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, look at this. This is my email. Look at this. On that tab there of my web browser, that's my email.
It's all out there.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Google Apps, by the way.
It is good. I must admit, we still use Zoho, and I'm using it for a television show that I do at the moment too, which is very good. It means that we can shoot in the field, we can edit, we can do everything, and everyone knows where we're at one particular town, at one particular time. Really good application.
So that's Zoho.com.
It is. Mm. That's a freebie. Log in with your Gmail account, whatever takes your fancy, and away you go. You can share Word documents and spreadsheets. That's where we're all heading. What else? Optus has declined to put a date on an upgrade of its 3G network to HSPA+. Believing that access devices and consumer demand for the speeds it promised weren't there yet. Well, there you go. Another Optus. They might say you can do anything and unlimited and supersonic, but apparently they don't have the gadgets to plug into their network to make it go really fast. So they're sitting on the fence a bit with HSPA. Do you find that strange, Dr. Ron? Why would a company who's involved in mobile technology not want to get faster, better, quicker, sooner?
If it's not ready to deploy, then...
It is ready to deploy. Everyone else is doing it. Well, Telstra is.
Yeah, but them themselves may not be ready to deploy their technology, their version of it, so they're just going to hold off until it's right, I suppose.
Mm. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Oddspot Gadget website of the week coming up after this.
Suffering suck attack. This has to be the best technology show on the internet. Tech Talk Radio.
Remember when Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago? Listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03-8682-8836. The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03-8682-8836. That's 03-8682-8836. Call now, but we've run out of steak knives.
Doctor on, listening to the stream.
Furious.
Correct. No, no. There's Tony Abbott, are you listening? Wireless is not the answer.
Wacko, I say.
Oh, did you download it?
I did.
I downloaded it too, and I thought, what the?
It was brilliant until the power supply not blew up.
What's the WAF like?
The WAF is very, very high. It has high WAF.
Entertaining.
He's had the little chip put in the back of his neck.
Informative.
I suppose I may as well just throw that one out.
Independent.
Yeah. I was watching you on Latitude.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
I'm on a plane.
I'm on a, can you hear me?
I'm on a plane. Are you there?
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool. Oh, this thing is amazing.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
Out of my hole.
Everyone hears sound in three dimensions. It's kept us alive since man crawled out of the primordial ooze. My Ears is an online audio service. It's an online gadget that takes a snapshot of your head and renders your favourite games in realistic 7.1 channel 3D sound.
Oh, really?
My Ears is offered as a subscription service, which means you can access it from any connected PC and use your My Ears profile wherever you are.
Is this a game?
It's an online service. It means when you upgrade or change your headphones, you come back and you recalibrate your listening. Your games need to support surround sound and take advantage of this option.
How can you have surround sound in your headphones?
Well, this service provides it. You can go through
Sorry.
The calibration
Sorry,
process.
Help me out here.
It's not real surround sound. It emulates surround sound.
It's actually better because you've only got two eardrums, if you think about it. Look up the old name for this used to be binaural. Binaural.
Okay.
Look that up, Google that, you'll find some interesting information about how it works.
Look, you can go through the calibration process.
Stamos says, primordial what, Dr. Ross?
Primordial ooze. You can go through the calibration process, you can hear a demo of what your audio profile is going to sound like, but if you want to use it with games, you need to register with the service. For more information, go to myears.net.au. But that's our gadget, Andrew, the online audio service, My Ears.
Here it is, everybody, the world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Andrew, thank you for this contribution to the website of the week segment.
This is really good, wasn't it?
It's a good one. It's a good find. YTTM.TV. YTTM.TV. It's a time machine website with a very clever slider control across the top.
And a Google front end.
And a Google front
Sorry,
end.
Not a Google, a YouTube front
a
end.
A YouTube front yeah. end. You simply select the required year from all the way from 1860 through to 2010. You can see movies, music, sports, current events, commercials, television programs and video games that hit the charts or were topical in your year of choice. Now, the creators of YTTM have uploaded over 4,000 video clips for your wilfing pleasure. Wilfing is what was I looking for. The site is currently in alpha, which means it's being tested still and it's being developed, so it's only going to get better. But very good little interface, a
what
lot of fun.
What does YTTM mean?
I don't know, Graham.
YouTube Time Machine.
There you go, YouTube Time Machine.
Thanks,
I knew the TM was Time Machine. I didn't know what YT was.
YouTube Time Machine.
YouTube Time Machine. YTTM.
That's great. We were wilfing around there at work today. It was very funny. Some of the video clips back in the 70s and 80s was very good. And I think Brian scrolled back to the JFK assassination and had it on news. Oh. And that was like, oh, was it that long ago? Yeah, and that's just it. You click the news or choose what you're interested in that year and you get a video, which can be quite
was
disconcerting.
Was that 1963?
Yeah.
There you go. That's our website, yttm.tv.
Oh, okay, I better push this button.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
Prepare to be transported into bizarro world for the next 30 seconds or so. In this fast-paced world of technology, being dead and buried doesn't mean that you can't have your friends over. A Seattle-based company is in the business of installing coffin cam so you can watch your loved ones after they've become dearly departed.
They must put a light in there. Is it like the fridge light?
The website...
Coffin light.
The website seemerot.com says after much leaks... I told you it was bad. Says after much legal wrangling and technical obstacles, they're now able to view new camera images for many years, and several modifications have been made to the latest cams and caskets.
The website, this technology gone incredibly bad.
The website has caused outrage and controversy, and there is heated discussion on the popular Snopes website as to the actual authenticity of the business.
Really? It's a stooge, is it?
Well, Snopes doesn't come out and say that it's a fake, but it may very well be. But as I said, bizarro world. SeeMeRot.com. I didn't know whether to make didn't know whether to make it a website and a gadget and an odd spot all rolled into one. But
we have. Well done, Dr. Ron.
There we have it, Andrew. Pull us out of this dive, will you?
We're going to go. See you next week. Nearly getting to our 300th. Wait, this is going to be a big show.
And huge. Goes we have no idea from what we're
going to do. Yeah, absolutely.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.